Okay, so we are summarizing anyway. So if someone is, so we wanted to study the Ising model. So what's the Ising model? It's a sum over configurations where the spins can be plus or minus one, exponential of a coupling interaction between spin Si and Sj, which are neighbors. That exponential we could write as 1 plus tangent of the coupling. I went back to calling j the coupling instead of t. Yesterday it was still t. I'm back to calling it j. You can still call it t if you prefer. And if you remember, this expression only takes two values when Si times Sj is 1 or minus 1. And you can match it with the exponential and it works up to an overall factor, which is cosh of j. So you do it for each link. So there is an overall factor out here that we don't worry much, which is cosh of j to the power of how many links there are. Okay? Then, together with a cosh, this is just exponential, which means that I interpret this product when I expand it out as I either take a 1 or take this term. And so I'm left with configurations of sticks, which have no open ends, because, right, sum of the odd spin is 0, and 0 or 1 stick per link. The weight is just 1. And that we saw that we could still write as a gas of loops, totally independent loops. So it's exponential of one loop. When I expand down, it gives 0 plus 1 loop plus 2 loop square plus 3 loop cube over 3 factorial and so on. So totally independent loops. Provided we put a few minus signs related to the winding of this loop. So for example, this guy would have winding z. Would have winding 0, right? You know, wind when there is a small wind in the opposite direction. And so this, for example, this path would come with a minus sign. Now the key observation, this was what Jeremy was worried yesterday, was that this still looks a little bit non-local, but it's very local. I just write that this minus one to the winding, I can think that I can incorporate it by at every step putting a factor of e to the I pi over 4 when I turn left, 1 when I go straight, and e to the minus I pi over 4 when I turn right. So at each step of the path, I can incorporate this winding. And therefore, my result is n, this normalization, exponential. Now I put the minus here. So I put the minus there because there is winding plus 1, as you asked, that there is a plus 1. It's just an overall minus. And then this nl we define now as the number of paths weighted by minus 1 to the winding, and not minus 1 to the winding plus 1. OK? All right, it's just we just took the minus 1 here. Right? And what was the strategy then to find this NL? So first we went from NL to a more refined quantity, which is the number of paths that are open that go from the origin to the position ij in L steps, right? So number of paths weighted by winding, number of paths of L steps. Weighted by winding from the origin all the way to ij that end at ij at position beta. So in this case, for example, beta would be equal to going from left to right. Then we went first to this quantity. The second step is to write a recursion relation, right, that relates RL ij beta, fixes it in terms of YRN, fixes it in terms of N L minus 1 at the neighbors. Now to solve this recursion relation, the idea is to go to Fourier. We go to Fourier. We will diagonalize and solve the recursion relation. After, once it's solved, we close the paths. We sum over beta 0, which was, remember, our original direction. We said at step 0, I came from the bottom, but I have to sum over all possibilities that I had for my first step. So we close the path. We sum over beta 0. And in this way, we get NL. And then we sum over L. and that gives us that will give us then the partition function. Okay, so let's work this out. So let's start, let's recap step one. Step one we did yesterday, so I'm just going to write the result and you tell me if you have any questions. So let's say that NL, from the number of paths that end at position I and J and end up at position, right, was equal. Well, if I come from the right, there's nothing to do. I just compute with weight one. If I come from the right, so first of all, if I'm at position ij and I go from the right, it means I was at position I minus one. So yesterday we did another example because I remember it, j was shifted, right? So now I is shifted, it's another component. But if I end up coming from this direction, I was at I minus one, j, and I was coming, I was at this position arriving from here, then I went straight. But I could have arrived at that position, ij, going up. In that case, I went up and then I turned right to go right, and so there is a factor e to the minus I pi over 4. Or I minus 1 j going like this, that's impossible. Sorry. Going like this, that's impossible because I cannot go back. I cannot go and come back.
I'm gonna type plus one.
No, that's wrong. So, because I end up at position ij from this direction, in the previous step, I was at position I minus one, always, right? What is wrong indeed is that I forgot to say I'm at the previous step, so L should be L minus one. So, always I minus one, j, and the last option that I have is this direction, right? And then I turn, no, this I did already, down. Then I go down and I turn left, so e to the plus I pi over 4. Okay. So there are these, and there are three other equations which are similar to this. There is the equation, let's just write, there is the equation corresponding to a shift I plus 1, there is the equation that has a shift J plus 1, and there is the equation that has shift J minus 1, right? So the equation we wrote is the equation with a shift I minus 1, right? Because we end up going to this direction, if we end up, right? In other words, this equation is the equation for this arrow. This equation is the equation for this arrow, and this equation is the equation for this arrow. Do you agree? If I end up at position ij in those directions, previously I was in those positions. All good? Okay, so that's step one. So we wrote a recursion relation. Step two, we Fourier transform. So let's write the Fourier transform. So the Fourier transform says that n hat of q, q is a vector, is equal to the summation of, so we still have an index L, to the sum of NL R is just I and J, beta, there's still an index beta, sorry, beta, e to the I r dot q. This is exactly the same Fourier transform as before. If you remember, there was 1 over square root of the volume here. So let's keep it as before. Okay. So this would be the Fourier transform. where I sum over all positions in my lattice. By the way, let me add in point one here that we have these three equations plus boundary conditions, which in our case was the statement that at position zero, what at position zero, I have no option. I needs to be at the origin, J needs to be at the origin, and beta needs to be equal to whatever we chose, and we said that beta was initially coming up for convention. Later we will sum over this choice. We will change this choice. But before we said that at the first step, we assume we came from the bottom. Okay? But this is what is beta zero. If you want, you can keep beta zero, and later we will sum over beta zero, of course. But for now, this was the solution with our boundary conditions. And the idea is now to convert this into into a recursion relation in Fourier space. So what? How do we go to a recursion relation in Fourier space? I just multiply by this exponential the previous equation and sum over the positions. Do you agree? So on the left-hand side, I get immediately the object in Fourier that I want. What about here? When I multiply by the exponential and sum over the positions, what do I get? Or this term here. You see, this is R, and what about this? Is this R? Almost, right? It's R shifted by one unit vector. So I can add and subtract that unit vector, and then the sum that I get again constructs the Fourier transform times the exponential of that unit vector. So all these terms give the Fourier transform up to some small exponential because of the shift that I have to do to recognize the Fourier transform. Is this okay? And therefore, immediately, we see that in Fourier, we will get the Fourier object, the Fourier object, the Fourier object. It will always be the same Fourier object. And there is no such thing as shifting the arguments. That's the idea that Fourier diagonalizes anything which has translation invariance. Okay? So let's write down the equation in Fourier space then. We can now do it automatically. So the idea, as we said, is we multiply each of those four equations by the exponential and we sum over the radius. When we do it, we get, on the right-hand side, let's put all the equations in a matrix. And so on the left-hand side, sorry, I multiply by the exponential and one for each term, and I will order the terms as in the first equation, not as in the left. As in the first equation, for each term, I just sum, and the only thing I do is I put hats. So I get n L hat of q, number of paths that in Fourier q that end up, no, not that. Right? Number of paths, the second equation would be number of paths that end up, I'm choosing the notation, right? Then up, same q, then number of paths q that end up left. A number of paths L Q that end up down. And now what I'm going to do, I'm going to write a 4x4 matrix here. Times the same vector, but with L minus 1. But otherwise exactly the same vector. So let's work out the matrix. So please tell me the components of the matrix by multiplying and summing over. What's the first component? So we are going to, from that equation, we read off the first row.
One.
Okay, second component. No, first component, not one.
Into the IQ one, right?
No, no, no. Yeah, almost one. So the first component is what?
Into the IQ one.
Yeah. E to the I QX, right? Let's use QX and QI. Do you agree? Because you have to multiply and divide by e to the IQX to reconstruct the full position, right? Good. Second component. Second component over there, in the second term, in the sum. What would it be?
E minus I pi over 4.
Sorry? E to the minus I pi over 4, you are right. And more? And what else? Right, e to the minus I pi over 4 plus I qx. Right. Third element. 0. And last element.
E
I pi over 4 plus I qx. Okay, that's the first line. Second line. First element. Now we have to think a little bit, but you see the pattern, right? So let's see the easy ones first. Let's do the easy ones. The easy ones is, for example, the diagonal. When we go up, up, up. So first, the zero is the easiest one, right? So when I go up, I can't be coming down before. So there is a zero here. Let's do the zero here. When I came like this, I couldn't be going like that before. So there is a zero here. And when I came down, I could not be coming up, so there is a zero in the second element. Right? So those are the easy ones. Now let's see. The ones that go straight, the diagonal ones. The diagonal ones, what should I put on the diagonals? On the diagonals, I never turn, right? I go in the same direction. So what should I put in this diagonal here? E to the IQI, because now the shift is in the opposite direction. So E to the IQI. What about here? Now going in that direction.
Minus
IQ. E to the minus IQX. Good. And here? Sorry?
Minus IQ.
Yeah. E to the minus IQY. And now the other ones. So this line, remember, all comes with E to the IQX, QY, but it's just about, let's write E to the minus IQY, let's put minus I pi over 4 everywhere. And then we change the one to plus. Right? The minus you can flip to a plus. The plus you cannot flip to a minus. Something important. Right? I just copy and put on here. Now let's fix them. So I want to put plus when I turn left. So I go up. So I go, if I want to turn left, it means that I was coming through the right and then I went up. So I'm coming through the right. Third element is the one with the plus. Here I want to turn left, so it means I came down.
No, it's the other one. Because you turn left.
If I do this, I turn right. Yeah, sorry. So this is plus. Now here, I want to go like this, so it means I came down. So I came down, so it's the last one. And here, I go like this, I want to turn left, so I came like this. So it's the third one. Okay? So that's the matrix.
The 3-4 element is like in a minus IQX.
Ah. Okay, and so what we have in this equation is the following. I can write this equation as saying that I have n hat, right? L direct of q direction a. So I'm putting here a. A is beta. Okay, let's call it beta. I'm putting the beta here. And you say that this is equal to a matrix T beta beta prime times the vector NL hat beta prime of Q minus 1. And so we have exactly this T, this transfer matrix that grows, increases by 1, where this T is the 4 by 4 matrix that we wrote there. Let's emphasize that this T is a matrix that depends on Q. Do you agree? And so, you see that you can increase L very trivially, just multiply by T, right? So the solution is pretty obvious, which is that this guy, N hat L of Q, where I'm thinking now, okay, I can put beta, is just equal to this matrix T L times I multiply this matrix as L times beta beta prime times N0 of Q. Right? Start from 0, go to 1, 2, 3, 4. I have just applied many times. And what is this N hat 0? That's the boundary condition. We had the boundary condition in position space. We should just convert it to Fourier space. So let's do it. Let's do it here because here we introduce Fourier. The boundary conditions in Fourier, I just multiply by the position and sum over the over R. So what do I get in Fourier for my boundary? Sorry. There was a mistake there. Right, it's boundary condition, right? It's when L equal to 0. So I multiply by the position and I sum over R. So tell me if you agree. N L at when L is 0 of Q. Right? And now let's put the beta up here because now we are putting beta up here. It's equal to, so I multiply, I sum. The sum immediately sets I and J to 0, so it kills the exponential. Beta needs to be a. Beta is set to beta 0, and so I get 1 over L times delta beta being equal to beta 0, which was going up. In other words, it's 1 over L times the vector 0, 0, 0, 1.
No, the 1 is in the second component.
The 1 is in the second component? Why? Because we order them according to this. Yeah. Right? Okay, so this is the solution that I forgot that some people cannot see there, so let me copy it here. So we solved the problem in Fourier space and we got that our N hat L of Q at beta was equal to transfer matrix to the power L. By this power, I mean I dot the matrix many times, L times, beta, beta prime, components beta, beta prime, times the vector at L equal to 0. Q beta, and this was just 1 over L, 0, 0, just the boundary condition, because we said that we start at position 0, we'll have our path, but we said that here we enter in this direction, beta 0 equal up. Yeah.
I still have some questions about the elements in the matrix. For example, the subparts of the symmetric element, for example, the 2-3-1 and the 3-2-1.
Sorry, slower. The 3.
3-2, that
3-2?
With the 2-3-1, the symmetric one.
2-3, yeah, this and this, yeah.
Look, the theta, the difference in the angle is pi over 4. However, the rotation direction is different, so the minus, the sign should.
Ah, you say there is some pi over 4, which is minus pi over 4? Okay. Did someone else agree?
The third line should be.
And another.
The third line, the pi over 4s are wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and yeah.
Yeah, this is trivial for to do for you. When you are zooming in, you cannot see the orientation. It's hard. Yeah. But is it okay now? If you have a, if there is one element that is polemic, we can do it slowly together and check. But
what
if you did the check, I trust you.
What was the changes that happened?
The third line, the left.
The third line, I changed the signs of pi over 4. Is everyone happy now?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So we solved the problem in Fourier, right? We solved the problem in Fourier. And what do we want now? What do we want to close the path now? What we want is to say that the path goes, right? It can do whatever, it can wind, no problem. But at the end, I must close in the right direction, because by hypothesis, we said that we will enter through position beta zero. Do you agree? So what we want to compute is, this is what we get, but what we want is NL. We want to go back to the origin, and we want to enter at position beta zero. Right? We want, after L steps, to go back and enter there at position beta zero. And more precisely, what we want to do is then sum over all possible beta zero. Right? And this is our NL. Okay? So we have the solution, and this is what we want. So we just undo the Fourier transform now. Right? So this NL, the inverse Fourier transform, what is it? So NL I, J, and beta is the sum in Fourier e to the I q dot r with a minus sign now, if you want the inverse Fourier transform, times n hat l I comma j comma beta. No. Q. Let me quickly check normalizations. So n hell. Okay, let's just check. Let's do a parenthesis just to check normalization. We said that this guy was 1 over L. Yeah, actually, 1 over L sounds wrong. It's probably 1 over L squared. Okay, but we'll check. So we said this is 1 over L sum over R. I'm just checking a normalization. And then for this to be true, right, I need that sum over Q E to the I Q R minus R prime, right, times this normalization, 1 over L. This should just be Kronecker delta, R and R prime, but of course it's not. When R equal to R prime, I sum L square terms, so I need an L square here. So I need an L square here, and therefore I need an L square here. It's 1 over the volume. Okay?
And this zero vector, the NL zero beta.
Ah, yeah, and then in the NL zero, I need. And the square here. Okay, so I don't know why I thought it was square root of the volume, but apparently I'm wrong.
And the inverse Fourier transform also then gets into pi, right?
No. What? Why?
The sum of the e to the ik. Oh no.
Sorry, sir. Just correct, right? When r equal to r prime, this is 1, and I sum L square values of q, so I get 1. Okay. So this, with this normalization, now I remember. OK, because indeed, normally we put L, now it's too late to change. But we could put L and put 1 over L in the definition, right? We distribute, it's up to us to distribute where we put the normalization factors. Normally it's more convenient. Right now, we are saying the inverse comes with 1, but we could put 1 over square root of volume here and 1 over square root of volume in the other one, and it's okay. We are not doing any mistakes, it's fine. Okay, so then that's what we should do. We should, now we have the solution, right? Here is the solution, and we should compute this quantity. So let's see what this quantity is. So this quantity, at the origin, I put I and j equals 0, so the exponential drops, but I still have the sum over q, and so this nl would be equal to the sum over beta 0, sum over q, n hat l of q beta 0, right? But you see that what is this doing? I start with the vector 0, 1, 0, 0. And I end with what vector? 0, 1, 0, 0, the same vector. Right? So I compute this, and I extract the component beta 0, which means that I take this guy, this object here, and I dot it with this vector 0, 1, 0, 0. But I sum over the options. Then I do the same for 1, 0, 0, 0, and then for 0, 0, 1, 0, and then for all the options. So what am I doing? By taking this, so I take element, I took the element 2, 2 of this object, but then also element 1, 1, element 3, 3, and element 4, 4. And I add over them, so I'm taking the trace. So this quantity is nothing, right? This object, there is 1 over L square, it's nothing but 1 over L square, sum over q, and then trace of our matrix t to the r. The trace came from the summation over beta 0. And so we get this beautiful expression that our number of paths here, this is our goal, is related to the trace, to the summation over Fourier modes of a trace of a 4 by 4 matrix to the power L. Right? You agree? Okay. So how do we compute this? Let me emphasize, this is really in Fourier space, right? So this is just the matrix that depends on Q that is written there in the blackboard. It's really this 4 by 4 matrix here, right? Take this matrix, this is the matrix T of Q. Actually,
why don't we have the exponential factor over there? Minus I.
Because we go to the origin, right? We set I and j to be 0. Right? So r is 0. Right? There in that equation, you want to put I and j to 0. Actually, it's not correct what I wrote. It's not correct.
Okay.
We have to fix a mistake that I do, and the simplest way to fix it is to fix it up there. So let's keep the definitions as is and say that NL we really define as number of paths that start from 0 and then come back, right? But then let's be very careful in understanding what do I want here. In this equal sign, then I need to be more careful. Because remember, why did we put the 1/2? Because of the orientations, right? But there was another factor that we put in the random walks. Remember what? What was it? Not to overcount walks. We don't say we start here and we go here. right? And then we had to divide by L because the origin can be at any position of the path. So if I want to keep this definition of L, I should put here a 1 over L. This is for not to overcount, because when we have a closed path, we close the path, but we could have started. These are all origins that give the same path. Right? It would be the same path if I just I start here, it's the same path up to a translation, right? If I just translate these guys to the origin, it's exactly the same path. So I have to divide by L. And we and this N, right now, defined as it is, it's the number of walks that start at the origin, but they could start at any position, and so there would also be a factor of volume here. Okay? So if I want to keep the other definitions downstairs as they are, I need to add this. So this is translation just, right? If I keep this definition that NL are the number of closed paths that start and end at the origin. Because what I wanted is the number of closed paths in the lattice, right? So they differ by volume because starting at the origin is not a restriction. They can start anywhere. It's just multiply by the volume. But you have to divide by L, because you want to count this path with length L just once. You don't want to count it L times. Yeah?
Why do we only consider it like a closed path in here if it enters the origin at with the same direction? Like, why couldn't we go from the left onto the starting place, and then that would still close the path?
That would still close the path. Then the boundary conditions we should have used to solve that model was that at zeroth order step, we were coming through the left.
So what's the importance of...
The importance is that if you come through another direction, you would not be putting the correct factor of e to the I pi over 4 to take into account that the last step there would be a turn. So we are taking into account all the turns, but we need to be careful that the last turn we must take into account.
So why are we looking at this? Like, this seems like a subset of like considering all closed paths where you could enter at any direction. So why are we looking at it with a closed path being defined as entering with the same direction, the closing?
It's not the same direction as you continue the path. Here I'm just saying that I entered vertically. I'm not saying that I continue vertically. In the picture, I continue vertically, but what's important is the way I enter. I'm saying I consider the paths that in the step zero, they came vertically. So it's like at the origin, I came from the bottom. But I'm not saying I continue up. One path, I continue up. But another option is I came here and I did this. What was important here was this is beta zero. It's saying that at the end, whatever you do, don't forget that when you come back, right, you continue. And this is just saying at the end, glue like this. Right? Close the path like this. So at the end, do whatever you want, but close like this. And then we summed over ways of entering. So we are considering everything. But we just say it's not, it would be a restriction if I said that I came vertically and I continue vertically. That would be a restriction. I just said that I want to enter like this. If I don't put this condition, then I would never have the correct factor. Here, for example, I want factor 1. But here, if I put like this, I want factor e to the I pi over 4. So I need to tell where I came from. You see that right now, in the first step, I already multiply by t. I already put this factor there if it's there. Because already at the first step, there is already a t. It's t0 times t. So that t already puts the right I pi over 4s if I need them. So, and if I did not take that into account, I would not know what e to the I pi over 4 to put in the first step if I did not say where did I come from. Okay, so sorry for this, but do you understand that this factor? Of course, we could either we change definition. If we keep this definition of NL, we need these two factors that I forgot in the beginning of the lecture. So please fix them. Okay. So with the armed with these factors, we can go on in the computation. That volume factor nicely cancels the volume factor we have here. And therefore, we conclude at our partition function of the Ising model, our partition function of our Ising model, let's write carefully, in two dimensions, is equal. So first there was a factor, cosh j, to the power of the volume, and then there was exponential of minus 1/2 sum over all q, and then sum over all l trace of t of q to the power l times 1 over l.
And the volume term, right?
Sorry?
And the volume term is 12, right?
The volume cancelled, right? So NL contains 1 over volume there. It cancels the volume. Right? Volume is L square. Okay, so I think this expression is perfect. There is no typo. Where T is that 4 by 4 matrix. So how do we do this computation now? How do you compute now this? T is a 4 by 4 matrix. You need to multiply it L times, take the trace, divide by L, and sum over L. That sounds hard. But what would be the trick to do this computation? Remember, we already used once a transfer matrix, right? And we had to multiply it many times and take the trace. What did we do to compute that? Yeah, we compute the eigenvalues. Because trace of T to the L, if I compute the eigenvalues, is just sum of eigenvalue to the L. You agree? Is it clear? So this expression is just a sum over the four eigenvalues of the matrix, lambda j, that depends on q, it's just the eigenvalues of that matrix to the power L. Right? And now what do we get? Now we just do the sum over L. Sum over L of lambda to the L over L gives log. Right? So now we explicitly do the sum over L. So we conclude that the result is there is some normalization. And then exponential of minus 1/2 sum over Q of logarithm of 1 minus lambda 1 times 1 minus lambda 2 times 1 minus lambda 3 times 1 minus lambda 4. Right? Just each summation over L of the lambda gives a log. A sum of logs is log of products.
But what happens to the 1 divided by all factor?
Sorry? What happened to what factor?
To the 1 divided by all factor.
1 over L is what you need to get a log. Otherwise, it's a geometric series. Otherwise, you'll get 1 over 1 minus 1. Okay? But actually, there is a trick to do this. Instead of computing the eigenvalues, notice that these are the eigenvalues. This is the product of the eigenvalues of the matrix identity minus t. Right? So this is the product of the eigenvalues of identity minus t. In other words, this object is the determinant of identity minus t. So you don't even need to compute eigenvalues. You can just take identity, subtract that 4 by 4 matrix, compute determinant, and this is the result. it's logarithm of the determinant of this matrix. And therefore, we'll write it. So now I will not compute a 4x4 determinant. I will tell you what the result is, but you probably don't want me to compute a 4x4 determinant anyway. So the result is so if I did no mistake, this determinant, which is the argument of the log, is equal to 1 plus v square minus 2v, 1 minus v square, cosine of qx plus cosine of qy.
Where did the information of V come from?
Ah, the information of V comes from an important point that I forgot. there is V to the L there that we forgot. So here there is V to the L. And so when we sum, we get V here, V here, V here, V here. And that's about it's 1 minus V times Q. The determinant of 1 minus V times Q, very important, yeah. Okay. And therefore, let's summarize, let's write the final result. We can write it here. Let's write it. I'm a bit puzzled by something. So, no, it's okay. Perfect. So, so notice that if I want to write everything in terms of V, here I have J, there I have V. Let's write that, let's point out that this factor is 2 to the volume, 1 minus V squared to the minus volume. Do you agree with me? 1 minus tangent square is 1 over cosh square. So this is 1 over cosh square. So there is a minus, so it's cosh square to the V, to the no, then it's not okay. Should be V over 2, right? Yeah, it looks like V over 2, right? Is it correct? Cosh square. Cosh square. Yeah, it's correct. 1 minus tangent square is 1 over cosh square. Yeah. And so the final result is that Z is equal to 2 to the volume 1 minus V squared. Can you read if I write here? Can you read okay? Yeah. 1 minus V squared to the minus volume over 2 exponential of minus half sum over Q's in the Brillouin zone, logarithm of 1 plus V square minus 2 volume 1 minus V square cosine QX plus cosine QY. And this sum, if I want, this sum is approximately equal to the integral d2q over 2 pi square, right? So if I sum 1, I get volume. So if I put 1 here, I should get volume. So there is a volume, right? Which is perfect because the partition function is exponential of volume times the free energy per volume, right? So there must be a volume upstairs. And so this sum, in practice, I can replace like this for large volume, which is what we get. And so this is the partition function of the Ising model. And as I promised, it looks a bit like the partition function of the random walk, which was, you remember, a similar log with a similar sum of cosines. But here it was just 2t. And now we get a more complicated function of v. Right? Okay, so that's something. Let me point out that another representation of this same object would be obtained if I factor this guy out. Then I put the 1 here instead of this full guy, and here I divide by it, and I add an extra log, which is just a constant. I sum over Q gives a volume, and it would just affect this prefactor, right? So I could also, if you want, it's trivial, right, to just put a 1 here. Here, put minus 2 volume 1 minus V square divided by this constant, 1 plus V square, right? So this goes to this. This goes to this, provided here this factor multiplies times this log here, the 2 cancels the 2. The sum over Q gives me a volume. The minus sign gives me a 1 over 1 plus V square. So the volume. Right? If I replace this by whatever is here times this extra factor. Right? So that's another representation where I would have in my log 1 minus this function of V times the sum of cosines. And then it looks really like the Gaussian model, which was exactly this, with log of 1 minus, and instead of this complicated function of v, we got just 2j, or 2t. Right? Then it's the same thing. And then there is that prefactor over there. OK. So now let's make a few comments about this result. So we compute this free energy. So let's see. What do we see here? Right. And what we see is the following. So first, no, let's note that this result here, right, is exact, of course. But it's written in a way that it's friendly to a small v expansion. By friendly, I mean that it came from an expansion in loops, right? Small loops, v, v square, v4, and so on. And indeed, you see, if v is small, everything is easy. This one, it becomes 1 plus something small, something small, something. Everything is small. So this log becomes, when v is small, log of 1 plus v square plus v cube, which itself is a quantity which is small. So this quantity, right away, you can expand in V and read off all the components, all the number of loops, and so on. It's ready to be expanded in V. It's very easy to expand in V, right? And here as well. So you can just series expand this in Mathematica and get all the terms in V. And that's natural because it came from a small V expansion. But it's exact. So although it's friendly to a small V expansion, where the argument of the log becomes 1 plus v times something plus v square something else, etc. It's true at it's true for any coupling. And we can ask if there are some special couplings here, which would mean a special coupling, special temperatures. Right? This coupling is just temperature times the coupling of the spin. And indeed there are, because you can indeed see that if you are at very small temperature, this f of v is very small. There is a v here. And therefore, this is 1. This is very small. So you are integrating a log of 1 minus something very small times cosine. OK, so that's very close to 1. It's going to go from 1 to 1.1 and 0.9. It will be something around 1. Right? Do you agree? Then you increase this a little bit, and it is 1 and goes 1.207. It starts to be a bit bigger, the magnitude. And now something critical can happen if you reach the point where this quantity is such that when you integrate, now you get log of 0. Right? And so there is a critical V, which is the V where this integration would give a singular result, which is when this F of V, so there would be here a critical temperature or critical. That would be given by the condition that that F at that critical value the most dangerous points are when these cosines are biggest. So let's say qx is 0, qy is 0. Then the cosine is 1 plus 1 gives 2. Here I have 1. So it's when this f of v is 1/2. If f of v is 1/2, then the log of 1 minus f a V critical times 2 would explode. So I increase. It's all good. The main event, and then I reach this critical point. So you can solve this equation. When is this equal to 1/2? When is this equal to 1/2? And this gives me that the V critical is square root of 2 minus 1. And this is indeed the correct critical temperature of the Ising model that you might have derived in the homework. Who already reached this point of deriving this? There was a homework. There is a homework, right, about the critical temperature of Ising model?
But it is for Monday.
That's an upper bound.
We have one for tomorrow.
Okay. So in that homework, you are asked by a very different argument to determine the critical temperature of the Ising model, and you find square root of 2 minus 1. So it's a very non-trivial check. You would say, oh, I know this value, if you had already finished the homework. Right? So you would be, at this point, very impressed. Okay. So that's one thing. So there is a critical temperature there. And so let's try to see a little bit what happens close to this critical temperature. So just to see, why do we call it a critical temperature? So that's a point where clearly there is something going on. And so let's go, let's zoom in close to T equal TC, that is V, which is tangent of beta J spins, which was what we called J equal VC. Right? Okay. So So let's zoom in close to this critical temperature. Okay. And so when we do it, we would conclude that that my partition function is some normalization, that's not very important, but then times, so this part is not very important, I mean that it's regular, there's no singularity coming from here, but then we have exponential of minus volume over 2 integral d2q over 2 pi square, right? And then we are expanding this around the critical temperature. So this, we are expanding around the critical temperature. And therefore, we, let me write what we get, and you tell me if you agree. We get log, close to the critical temperature, the region that matters is the region where the momenta is very small, right? Because when the momenta is very small is when we approach the singularity of the log, right? So I can expand close to that point and read off that this is approximately equal to log, let me write the result and you tell me if you agree, of q square, because I expand at small momenta, plus some constant that depends on just series expanding that, times t minus the critical temperature. Okay? Actually, if you do the expansion, you see that it's T minus the critical temperature square. In other words, it's some constant times V minus the critical V square. So all I did there was I take the log, and so we took the argument of the log, and we expand at Q small and at V minus V critical small. We just expand around these two, and what we find is that the expansion at Q small of the cosines gives 1 plus Q square plus Q to the 4, blah, blah, blah. And the expansion of the rest gives an expansion around V equal to V critical. I put everything together, and that's what I get. Right? And we saw, right? This is how we determine the critical temperature. Let me emphasize again. We said that when Q is equal to 0, the log vanishing is the condition of critical temperature. So if I put Q equal to 0, the log is proportional to T minus the critical temperature. But it just turns out that it's a double zero. So okay. That it vanishes when V equal V critical is obvious. That it's a double zero is less obvious. But I can tell you a little bit why it is. But it's true. Is it okay? Are you...
What do you mean by the double zeros again?
I just mean literally. Take this expression. Series expand that small qx, small qi, and V around square root of 2 minus 1. And you get that result. This, where it, you get Q square, and you get V minus this number, which is 1 plus square, which is square root of 2 minus 1, square. So there is, a priori, you could imagine that there could be a more important term, which would be a leading term like this. It just turns out that this is not there. Right? When I series expand this, there is no term, linear term. I can tell you the physical argument why it should not be there, but it's just a true statement. It's not there.
But before we had the oscillations in our integral, and that's why we argued for Q small in some limit. Here, why can't we argue that we can expand around Q small?
I want to study the singular. What I'm after is the singular part of my partition function. I have my partition function, it depends on V, and I want to ask, is it becoming singular when V is approaching the critical V? So I'm zooming in on, it's equal to this behavior plus regular parts. The rest is regular. The integration around Q equal pi over 3, I don't care. I care about Q, which is giving me the singular contribution. Okay, this point is very important. So if you are totally lost, I should do it slowly. But is this point clear? Sorry?
No,
no, not clear. Okay. So let's do it a little bit slower. Okay, so let's see. So we start with log of 1 minus, okay. Well, why don't we even do it slower? Let's find the condition that f of v equal 1/2. Let's just solve this equation first. Let's find f of v equal 1/2. Let's hope this is not too hard to find. Let's solve this equation to find the critical temperature. So when we impose that f of v equal 1/2, so the equation we want to solve is minus 2v, 1 minus v squared over 1 plus, one plus v square equal to 1/2. So am I too ambitious? This equation is painful to solve, or it's easy? So let's try. So I multiply this to the other side, the two here, so I get 1 plus v square equal to 4v, 1 minus v square. Sorry?
We can check that that's the solution. We don't have to
solve. Yeah, maybe we can, but I'm not sure we can actually. Let me see. it should be easy to solve. Let me see if I solved it here. I don't think so. What's the fast way of solving this? Let me ask someone. Can someone check this equation? Do you have Mathematica open? Can you check? Check first that at the v that I said that this is zero. And after you do it, expand f around that critical value, and you will get 1/2 plus what? So the claim is the following. F at v around the critical point must be 1/2 plus v minus v critical times some number plus some number v minus v critical square, etc. Right? You agree? That's the definition of being at a critical point. I'm saying that this coefficient is zero. So can someone do the check? But first, when you plug v equal v critical, it works, and then that the next term is zero.
That's a solution.
It's a solution, but can you moreover expand the function around that point? So it's good. So it's a solution. It works. Check. Now, cities expand f of v around that point, and tell me if you agree that it's 1/2 plus 0 plus something times v minus v critical square. And just to cities expand f of v, cities f of v, comma, square root of 2 minus 1. Just expand around this value. then what I'm writing above follows from then these two statements that you are still checking, but you will confirm soon. That on the one hand, the cosines are 1 minus plus q squared. On the other hand, this f of v is 1/2 plus v minus vc squared. And both statements together are equivalent, imply this.
It's zero.
It's true, right? The first, the linear term is zero, and you get a quadratic. Okay, so that required the small computation of just expanding. And you see explicitly that it's zero. And it has a physical meaning. I'll tell you in a second. But it should be zero, and it is zero. Now, are you happy? Do you agree? Should I still do it even slower, or is it OK? Do you agree now? That you see it vanishes, of course. So when q is equal to zero, by definition, sorry, you should have, yeah, it's not, the sum over is 2 minus q squared. So when v equal to v critical, it vanishes, right? And then the deviation, when v is not equal to v critical, it doesn't vanish exactly, and the deviation is v minus v critical squared. And therefore, when v equal to v critical, it vanishes. The result just vanishes with q squared. And when q squared is not exactly, when q squared is zero, it vanishes quadratically. Right? So this constant is not the same as this constant. I have to reshuffle things a little bit. It's like before, the m squared was mu divided by 1 minus mu, something like that. You need to reshuffle things a little bit, but it's some constant. I don't care what the constant is. It's not important, the value of the constant, to determine the critical value, as we are now going to show you. OK? Is it OK? So let's go on, continuing to estimate the critical behavior. So the critical behavior comes when q is very small. So this integral, so the singular part, so z log z equal to something regular plus the region of integration close to q equals 0. So close to q equals 0, I will get. So let's write. So there is minus volume over 2. And then here, I write this as, OK, there is some integral. 2 pi q dq. I'm going to radial coordinates here, divided by 2 pi squared. Log of q squared plus some constant t minus tc squared. Again, if you want, you can write this as some constant times v minus vc squared. Doesn't make a difference. It just changes a bit this constant by the Jacobian. It's equivalent. We are close to the critical temperature, right? So expanding around VC or around TC is the same thing. Right? And therefore, you see that if I rescale Q by TC minus T, if I rescale Q, I get that this integral, that the singular part, let's write here, that log z right, or even we can do the integral, right? Log of q squared, the integral is exactly, it's perfect, it's ready to be done, the integral there. So the integral of q log of q squared plus some constant, right? This is just equal to log of q squared plus constant, right? No, it's equal, it's dummy, it's q squared log plus regular. If I take derivative, I act here, I get 2q. And if the derivative acts here, I get something that vanishes with q squared. We can do this estimate in many ways, but we are integrating from 0, from q, this is Q equal to zero, that's the interesting region, to some number of order one, that doesn't matter, it contributes to the regular part. No, sorry, here it was too fast. Yeah, let me backtrack a little bit and do it a little bit slower. So Q just a second. So this is the derivative of what's inside. So this is this is actually not good. Yeah. Let's integrate this properly. So this integral is This integral is equal to log of q squared plus a times q squared. This is true, but what I'm interested in is actually minus. If the derivative acts here, it gives the result I want, but if the derivative acts here, I get 2q Is this correct? Is this the integral of this quantity? So if I take the derivative, x there, it gives q over q squared, huh? The derivative. Sorry?
The integral of something like log x should be x log x minus x. So here it's the same.
Yeah, so let me understand something. I'm doing some mistake here. Let me think 1 second. I'm doing something silly here. So let's be more careful and do dimensional analysis. So by dimensional analysis, if I rescale q by t minus tc, here from q dq, I get t minus tc square, or from here, from d to q, if I rescale q by t minus tc, right? Because q wants to be of order t minus tc, right? And so if I rescale q by t minus tc, this integral here, so after I rescale q, I call it q tilde times t minus tc. Then q tilde would be order 1. And what I would get is that I would get minus volume over 2 t minus tc squared sitting in front of the integral. And then integral q tilde dq tilde log of t minus tc square times q tilde square plus some constant. Okay, you agree? And therefore, this log of t minus tc square, it becomes log. It's log of product, so it becomes log of this plus log of this. Now, t minus t square is regular, nothing special when tc t goes to tc, it just vanishes. But this log is interesting, and so this part contributes to the regular part. This is just regular, it doesn't come with extra log. And therefore, what I want is this log of t minus tc, so I conclude that the singular part is proportional, if I just care about the singular part, is proportional to t minus tc square times log of t minus tc square. And this is the result I wanted to derive there in the other blackboard, which is correct, but I'm struggling a little bit with the logs. I'm doing some silly mistake, but I did it correctly here, so I don't know. So this is definitely correct. So again, the statement is log z, log of my partition function is equal to some constant times volume times t minus tc square, log of t minus tc, notice the square is not important, it's just over a factor of 2, plus some regular expansion in t minus tc that has no singularity when t approaches tc. Right? And so this is the result that we derived. So the log of z has this behavior. So let's convert this to a physical quantity to show that the physical quantity would exhibit some singularity. Then we call it critical temperature. It's almost done, right? Log of z is already a free energy, so it's already almost a physical quantity. But let's convert it to something that we would measure. So what is the expectation about the average energy at temperature T? So let's compute now the average energy. So the average energy, how does it relate to log z? Well, what is the average energy? It just means that you should go to the original definition of z as a sum over configuration and bring down the Hamiltonian down once. Right? If you sum over configurations with the Hamiltonian downstairs as well, you are computing expectation value of the energy. And how do you bring down the Hamiltonian from the exponent? In the original definition of sum of e to the minus beta energy, how do you bring down that energy? Derivative with respect to beta. So this is derivative with respect to beta of log of z. Right? And so when we compute it, we see that this quantity is proportional to the derivative with respect to t, up to some Jacobian, of log of z. And therefore, this is equal. When the derivative acts on the log, it produces 1 over t minus tc. That multiplies that, it's regular. So what I'm interested in is when the derivative acts on the prefactor, and it gives some number, t minus tc. OK, it's proportional to the volume, so energy over volume would be some number t minus tc times log of t minus tc. Right? Now, this is not yet, this is still regular in the sense that when t goes to tc, it still vanishes. So if you are an experimentalist and you compute this energy, you don't see a problem. But suppose we compute a specific heat, which means when you turn on the thermometer, how much does the average energy change? So let's go and we compute a specific heat. The specific heat, what is it per unit volume, would be the derivative with respect to T of this quantity, right? How much does the energy change when I change the temperature, right? I increase the room temperature, how much does it change? And now, finally, things get interesting. What do we see? We see that I take one more derivative. If the derivative acts here, I get a constant. And when the derivative acts here, I get some number times logarithm of t minus tc plus regular. Okay? So here is where you would see, you would plot as an experimentalist, you change the temperature, and when you reach the critical temperature, the specific heat blows up. Okay, so this indicates really a phase transition. And so, indeed, what we see here is a sign of a phase transition, and this phase transition is precisely a transition when V is approximately zero, is a transition where all spins are up, to a transition when V is close to one instead, to the maximum, so here we are in ferromagnetic, to decoupled spins that don't care about each other. I'm not saying it's anti-parallel, I just say they are in the cupon, which would be paramagnetic. So while in the 1D Ising model, we saw that we did not have access to both phases because one was unstable and you could only have the other one. Here, no, here we do have a critical transition, and in terms of V, there really is a transition at some V critical between 0 and 1. And here we are in ferromagnetic, and here we are in paramagnetic. And if we stay at V critical, we are at a critical transition. Otherwise, we flow to either of the two.
Mm-hmm. I might be getting confused because, as I remember, zero was a stable point, and one was a stable. So I think that almost all the points should go to zero.
Imagine V critical. If V critical was going to this end or this end, V critical is unstable. Right? Why? V critical, you need to tune the critical temperature. As an experimentalist, you need to tune the temperature to go here. If you don't tune, you are not there. So this point, if it approaches this or this, then you have only, now you have two stable points and one unstable. But if this point moves to either end, it would be one unstable, one stable. And that's what we had in 1D. So 1D was the extreme case where we did not have ferromagnetic because this point decided to be here. And then this point was unstable and it was always high temperature in practice. Right? But now we have a finite critical temperature. And in one dimension, we have an argument why there should be no order, because these kinks could destroy order. And so next time, we will start with an argument why the same type of combinatoric argument, we will think now we'll have configurations of spinned up, they want to dominate, but we have entropy, who wins? And we will see that now it's not so obvious, there is a competition, so there should be a phase transition, and that's the transition we just found. Okay? So next time, what we will do, so let me just already announce a little bit. So in the next lecture, we will first do a few comments about this solution. One of them is about the critical temperature and duality. Namely, how we could have guessed the critical temperature. This is basically the homework. The homework is due on Monday. Does it mean that I should not solve it on Monday morning? Or it's due Monday morning? When is it due? Can I discuss things that are basically a solution to the homework on Monday morning? Or is this problematic? Because then you could just... Okay. I'll decide this later. So I'll make some comments about the critical temperature and duality and why this V equals square root of 2 minus 1 is expected. Okay, or at least I will mention a few words about the homework, what the homework is. But by then, you maybe will have done this part already. Right? Next, we will ask, okay, so this was Ising 2D without magnetic field. Right? What about other D? What about H not zero? What do we know about these things? Then we will mention a few comments about order in d equals 2 versus no order in d equals 1. And then we will move to self-avoiding walks after. And probably this will be already Tuesday. So probably Monday we close the Ising model. And I would like to now start moving into the missing element of this course, which would be the self-avoiding walks. And we might already do some self-avoiding walks. A subset of self-avoiding walks. So you can consider walks that the general self-avoiding walks that don't self-cross. That looks very non-Markovian, as we said. But there are subclasses of walks that are don't self-avoid and are still Markovians. And we will start with those. It's a subset of walks that can be used by very similar techniques. So maybe that's a good entrance point. So maybe those ones we might still solve on Monday. See how we would go about solving them. But so Monday we conclude with physical comments about this solution. And then we go to self-avoiding walk. Okay? So that's the plan. Okay. I think we can stop here, right? It's a good time now, right? It's the time. Okay.